NBC Monitor News on the hour. This is Lee McCarthy reporting that the Senate confirmation of L. Patrick Gray as director of the FBI may not be pro forma. The president announced this afternoon that he is nominating Gray as the agency's director. Gray, a political associate of the president for many years, has been acting director since the death of J. Edgar Hoover last May. It is Gray's longtime association with the president which will bring him under the close scrutiny of senators who believe the FBI should be non-political. Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, the assistant majority leader, has indicated that he will oppose Gray's nomination because he campaigned for the president, and according to Byrd, because Gray managed the release of crime statistics so they would benefit the president politically. Senator Edmund Muskie has told NBC News that he considers the Gray nomination doubtful until the question of Gray's political involvement are cleared up. The White House said there was no significance in the 9-month delay in nominating Gray. The president simply had other pressing matters and thought the nomination could wait. It was also announced at the Florida White House that Henry Kissinger met for 2 hours with Mao Zedong. Kissinger, in the third day of a 5-day visit to China, had met earlier with Premier Zhou Enlai. There has been speculation, but no confirmation, that a United States diplomatic operation in China below the embassy level may result from the Kissinger visit. 20 more American prisoners of war were supposed to be on their way to the Philippines from Hanoi at this hour, but their release has been delayed until 2:30 Eastern Time tomorrow morning. No reason for the delay was given. Operation Homecoming's first phase ended today with the arrival of 20 ex-prisoners at Alameda Naval Air Station in California. They were the last of the 143 POWs freed last weekend to arrive in this country. They also appeared to be worse off physically than the returnees who preceded them. They were thin, some limped, and two had to be carried from the plane by stretcher. The Men's Clothing Industry Association has announced that a $500 clothing certificate will be awarded to each returning prisoner to help him acquire an up-to-date wardrobe. The men have already received $250 from the government for immediate essential purchases. The clothing items are just a few of the many differences between the treatment being received by our returning prisoners and that being given South Vietnamese POWs when they come home. Bob Jones reports.
American prisoners of war found tailored uniforms waiting for them when they came home. South Vietnamese POWs are issued baggy fatigues, several sizes too large, and with no insignia of rank. Returning Americans could eat almost anything they wanted. Vietnamese get the same rice and meat chunks they got while held prisoner, only a little more of it, and vegetables have been added. The Vietnamese POW sleeps on a steel cot in a crowded barracks. No mattresses and no blankets. American POWs are allowed to go home after a medical checkup. Vietnamese POWs say they've been told they will be held in the camp a minimum of 3 months. The government wants to re-indoctrinate them after their long association with the Viet Cong. Bob Jones, NBC News, Bien Hoa.
There has been more violence in Northern Ireland. In Belfast, a man and a girl raided a Protestant butcher shop and shot the butcher's assistant. In Londonderry, a bomb exploded in a supermarket. It was the third blast in the store since November. This time, a warning was given and no one was injured. Police in Israel have arrested 12 Israeli Arabs on sabotage charges. 43 Arabs have been arrested in Israel in the past 5 days. Most of the Arabs arrested today were suspected of setting mines along the frontier. Most were residents of border villages and were between 30 and 40 years old. Senator Muskie charged today that President Nixon's order to dismantle the Office of Economic Opportunity ignored a law which requires the agency to be continued through 1974. Muskie said the president plans to defeat the law simply by saying it's too late to save the OEO because I've killed it.
The president of the United States can ignore the clear mandate of the law in such a blatant way, then how do we build respect for law and our institutions? In our government, in our political leaders in this country. He's gone about it the wrong way. It's going to be difficult for the Congress to come to grips with it, but I think if the people will just back us up, that we'll find a way to make this president back down.
Muskie said the 2-year extension of OEO was designed to give even its detractors a chance to take another look at the poverty agency. Robert Strauss, the Democratic National Chairman, says his party can regain the confidence of the American people by giving high priority to public concerns over crime, health costs, and child care. The 4-year-old daughter of the Bank of Canada manager in Freeport, Grand Bahama, was released unharmed by kidnappers after her father agreed to pay a $250,000 ransom. However, the money was never actually paid. In Argentina, a 78-year-old businessman has been kidnapped, and the men holding him are demanding a ransom of $1.5 million. The AFL-CIO Executive Council meets with President Nixon in Miami on Monday. There are reports the president will grant major concessions to labor in return for its support of his economic policies. The Hour's lead story, the Senate may not give a rubber stamp approval to the nomination of L. Patrick Gray as director of the FBI. Some senators are expressing concern over what they call Gray's political involvement with President Nixon. Lee McCarthy, NBC News.
Booker T and the MGs riding in on Monitor with Time is Tight. Who says? We got 3 whole minutes.
Precisely where you are, good friends, and welcome. Tony Taylor sharing this Saturday evening with you. Possibly you're taking your Saturday night bath. Oh, good. Well,
No, it's not. Why? It's not spring yet. Why are you doing that? Well, maybe I should say welcome to the garden party. You'll understand that when I say it's sort of a garden party for Rick Nelson. Rick will be our guest, and we'll have lots of his music. Some of it is not the numbers Rick included in his concert at Madison Square Garden a while back. And when Rick didn't include enough of his songs, like Hello Mary Lou, well, the audience booed. So what we're going to do is start with Rick in the late 50s, bring him right to date, right up to the new image that has brought him success with his garden party.
Hello, Mary Lou. Goodbye, heart. Sweet Mary Lou, I'm so in love with you. I knew, Mary Lou, we never part, so hello.
Remember you, Rick Nelson. Well, Rick has changed a lot since he made that one, but whether he likes it or not, the record is still being played. And this is another thing he did before he formed the Stone Canyon Band, that is. Possibly you remember. Poor little fool, Rick Nelson.
I used to play around the parts, hasten at my call. But when I met that little girl, I knew that I would fall for a little fool. Oh yeah, I was a fool. She'd play around and tease me with her carefree devil eyes. She'd hold me close and kiss me, but her heart was full of lies, poor little fool. Oh yeah, I was a fool. She told me how she cared for me, that we'd never part. And so for the very first time, I gave away my heart, poor little fool. Oh yeah. Gone and I knew she lied to me. She left me with a broken heart, won her victory. Poor little fool. Oh yeah, I was a fool.
I was a fool, oh yeah.
Well, I played this game with other hearts, but I never thought I'd see the day when someone else will play love's foolish game with me. Poor little fool. Oh yeah, I was a fool.
Went to number one. See how quick you forget. Rick Nelson. When Rick talks about the good old days when he sold 35 million records, well, he says that kind of popularity cannot be sustained by being just another pretty face. His efforts have been directed at growing as a musician. We'll talk with him about that shortly. So stick around, everybody. You're on the Monitor Beacon. Tony Taylor back with Monitor and with more music by Rick Nelson. We'll have a chat with Rick in a couple of minutes, and it's amazing. Rick was 21 when he recorded Traveling Man, let's see, 1961. Some funny things have happened. People resist his changing his musical style, but the musical style that he started with has influenced groups, many English groups like, well, the Beatles, the Stones. They've admitted that they were influenced by his early records. Let's go back to one of those early records. Traveling Man, Rick Nelson.
I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stops all over the world, and in every port I own the heart of at least one lovely girl. I've a pretty señorita waiting for me down in old Mexico. If you're ever in Alaska, stop and see my cute little Eskimo.
a traveling man. Well, Rick has said that people expect him to do some of his early hits, such as Traveling Man, and it would be unfair not to do some of them. But he feels he owes more to his audience than just doing, well, revivals. Nowadays, though, it seems that only Rick and Elvis Presley are able to get away with a new image. The new Rick, of course, is personified in what was his first top 10 record since 1962. And he talked about that with reporter Tony Gilbert.
Rick, you have a very exciting, very successful song called Garden Party, actually an album. But most people seem to misconstrue it.
It was originally written because of a rock and roll revival show that I did at Madison Square Garden. At the very start, when the record first came out, a lot of people right away instantly jumped on the thing about the nostalgia thing, you know? And really, in the lyrics, the part of the song is saying that I don't really believe in that type of a thing. It's sort of a regression for me. You can never really recapture something that has already happened, I don't think.
Was that particular period, and how would you describe that musically? Was that unpleasant to you? Is that what you mean?
Oh, no, not at all. And it was, but it was something that I did, you know, and it's something in the past tense as opposed to looking ahead and everything. You know, that, to me, that's what's exciting about music and being involved in music, is what is going to come about later on, you know, and what kind of songs I'm going to write, and hopefully, you know, they'll get better and better, and you know, things like that, rather than going back and just sort of living on and doing old songs, because that's really what they are. They're old songs, and you can't change that fact, you know?
Are you saying that there was nothing interesting at that period, or you just feel that it's a past period and you might forget it?
I always did songs that I liked and material that I liked, and it was the 50s, it was the very beginnings of rock and roll and what music is right now, you know. I mean, it was the beginnings of that, and it's a very American thing, you know. It was probably that, and country music is probably the only really truly American, you know, oriented music. I feel very proud to have been around at the beginnings of that, but what I'm saying is what the songs are saying back then, just they don't hold up now, you know, because it's a completely different era.
The lyrics to your big hit album, and particular song, Garden Party, has a certain philosophy built in, and maybe you ought to talk about that.
It really is a philosophy of mine about that you know, too many people, I think, get caught up in trying to please everyone, you know, rather than just really doing what they know what's right for them, you know. Mm-hmm. And that all came about by really sort of going against my initial reaction to doing that rock and roll revival show. I didn't want to do it, and they kept after me for about 2 or 3 years to do one, and finally the one at Madison Square Garden came about, and I thought, well, okay, I'll do it, because maybe I'll get a chance to do new songs, and you know, I could never compromise.
First you have to believe in what you're doing yourself.
Right, for sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. Garden Party is a definite example of a thing that happened to me, and it was one of the easiest songs that I ever wrote, really, because all I had to do was think about exactly what happened and what my thoughts were on that particular evening when we did that rock and roll revival show.
Well, thank you very much. That was Rick Nelson. This is Tony Gilbert for Monitor.
If you're going to play at garden parties, I wish you a lot of luck. But if memories were all I sang, I'd rather drive a truck. That's part of the philosophy Rick was talking about. Let's hear the rest of it. Rick Nelson, A Garden Party.
I went to a garden party to reminisce with my old friends, a chance to share old memories and play our songs again. When I got to the garden party, they all knew my name. One recognized me, I didn't look the same, but it's all right now, I learned my lesson well. You see, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. People came from miles around, everyone was there. Yoko brought a walrus, there was magic in the air. And over in the corner, much to my surprise, Mr.
Tyler Hughes, hidden Dylan's shoes, wearing his disguise. But it's all right now, I learned my lesson well. You see, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. Played them all the old songs, thought that's why they came. No one heard the music, we didn't look the same. I said hello to Mary Lou, she belongs to me. Sang a song about a honky-tonk, it was time to leave. But it's all right now, I learned my lesson well. You see, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. Door and out stepped Johnny B. Goode, playing guitar like a ring and a bell, and looking like he should. If you gotta play at garden parties, I wish you a lot of luck. But if memories were all I sang, I'd rather drive a truck. But it's all right now, I learned my lesson well. You can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. La da da.
Town by Rick Nelson. Big hit of his. An instrumental version now from The Ventures. Rick Nelson's Lonesome Town. I think it was kind of fun this half hour talking with Rick Nelson, hearing his music, and sort of tracing his history as a recording artist. There is a lot of difference between Rick in his early 20s and in his early 30s. And it rather reflects the course of contemporary music, I think. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Tony Taylor. I'll be back on Monitor after a short intermission.
Hi there, kiddies. This is Cindy Adams, and have I got a story for you. Don't go away. I'll be back in just a few minutes.
This is Traffic Commissioner Ted Carragiza. When you're shopping, do the best bargains often seem to be in the stores across the street? If you cross in the middle of the block to get to them, you may be buying grief. Crossing mid-block is the biggest single cause of pedestrian casualties. Don't go shopping for an accident. Cross streets at corners only.
This is WNBC FM New York, 97.1 on your FM dial.
Double or Nothing time on Monitor. Two songs that were hits for Roberta Flack. Roberta sings her first one, Killing Me Softly with a Song. And Tony Mottola with The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face.
drumming my bed with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Taylor with you for more of Saturday Night Monitor. I'm going to ask you a very loaded question. If you could live forever, would you jump at the chance? If there were a pill that, well, would keep you from aging, would you take it? During this half hour, we'll hear about techniques to extend life and ward off death from the author of a book called Here Comes Immortality. He says these techniques are being perfected in laboratories right now. Knowing that some of you may be skeptical, let's live for today, huh? With the grassroots.
I think of all the words people seem to find, and how they're in a hurry to complicate their minds by chasing after money and dreams that can't come true. I'm glad that we are different, we've better things to do. May others plan their future, I'm busy loving you. One, two, three, four. Take it nice and easy and use my simple plan. You'll be my loving woman, I'll be your loving man. We'll take the most from living, have pleasure while we can. You people,
and live for today. Grassroots. Our next guest doesn't hold with the idea of living just for today. In fact, he has made the statement that death is on the way out. Jerome Tuccilli has written a book called Here Comes Immortality, in which he discusses scientific methods of preserving and extending life. One of the techniques is called cryonics, and reporter Cindy Adams explored that with Mr. Tuccilli.
Jerry, what is cryonics?
Cryonics is the science of freezing people who are dying now so that they may have a chance at physical immortality. The idea is to freeze them and arrest the deterioration, and until a date can be reached when we can kill them in the first place and then reanimate them.
If one is about to be frozen, how soon after the moment of death must it take place?
Ideally, it should be at the instant of death, because the brain starts to deteriorate within seconds, within minutes anyway, afterward. So if we can arrest somebody's deterioration at the moment of death, they have a better chance of coming back. But they are looking forward to a day when they can reverse the damage that has been done, even in the case of somebody who has been killed in an automobile crash or an airplane crash. They're looking forward to a day when they can actually rejuvenate the cells that have been destroyed, including the brain.
Well, a lot of people would lose money if they, in today's day and age, if we found a way of freezing people, no?
How would they lose money?
Well, how about the undertakers, the mortuaries,
and
doctors?
Sure. We have a whole society that has a vested interest in death. I could think of religions. I can think of the AMA to a certain extent. There's a whole industry out there. So there's a reaction against the book already.
Now, this cryonics, I've heard of it in the case of Howard Hughes and Walt Disney. Not that we know whether Howard Hughes or where he is, or if he's alive or growing or what he is, but to get back to him in a second, what about Walt Disney? Where is he? Didn't he say that he wanted to be an ice cube or something when he passed on?
We know that Walt Disney specified before he died that he did want to be frozen. Since he died, nobody has been able to find his grave. There's an army of Walt Disney people out there who are looking for the grave. They haven't found it yet, so we don't know. As far as Howard Hughes goes, we'll have to ask Clifford Irving, I guess.
Yeah, right. Do you intend or want to be cryonicked, or what's the now, the verb? What is it? You want to be frozen?
Well, at 35 years old, I'm not looking forward to it in the immediate future, but the options are burial, which is total annihilation, cremation, which is also annihilation, or freezing, which gives one at least some small chance right now of coming back. So I would say with those options, sure, I would want to be frozen, yes.
It's a lot cheaper the other way.
It's cheaper, except that your life is completely gone. It's not really cheaper, though, because all it costs to be frozen is the premium on an insurance policy, a $20,000 policy.
Oh, no, the canister or whatever it is and all of that jazz that they have to keep up to keep you like a game turkey or something, that costs a lot of money.
But it does cost $20,000. It costs maybe $10,000 to do it immediately. The maintenance on it is paid for by the interest on the balance of the money. So a $20,000 insurance policy covers it right now.
For how long?
Hopefully indefinitely, as long as people have to be frozen before they can come back.
What happens if something happens to the mechanism and the freezing temperature rises and you could get killed that way? What about the religious aspect of this thing? Supposing there are the religions that believe in reincarnation, or Orthodox Jewry, which says, you know, you have to be, the body has to stay at the way it was found dead. How do you handle all of that? Isn't there going to be a hue and a cry?
Yeah, well, in Chapter 3 of Here Comes Immortality, I have a whole section on the religion aspects of it. I take the point of view that until now, the churches have had a monopoly on immortality. Finally, they've got competition.
Supposing you bring people back, this is going to be an awfully crowded planet. Have you ever seen a subway at rush hour or getting on a bus at rush hour? Now we got today's generation, and we got people 300 years old who are also running around for the train. It's going to be awfully crowded around here.
Yeah, but even now we're below the zero population growth level as far as childbirth goes. We are people are entering arrangements where they are having childless marriages. People are having short-term marriages. The whole structure of society is changing. Not only that, but it's not very far off before we start building cities on the oceans, which really accounts for 70% of the planet. There will be communities on other planets and so on. I really don't see it as a major problem. I think it's been exaggerated.
Supposing I should leave this little planet, and they freeze me, and I become sort of instant Cindy. Supposing my husband wants me to come back, what does he do? Throw me into hot water?
No, it's, unfortunately, it's a little bit more complicated than that. They have to find a way of thawing out a body without creating ice crystals in the cells, which really destroy the cells. They haven't perfected the technology yet. But there is a story recently out of Russia about a construction worker whose tractor fell through the ice. They fished him out of the river. He was completely solid, pronounced dead. Within an hour and a half, as his body temperature went up, they got a heartbeat. 2 hours later, he was fully thawed out, fully revived, and apparently with no side effects. This is an incredible breakthrough, I think.
Well, the question becomes, was he alive before he was frozen?
Well, when he went into the river, he was alive. He was driving the tractor. He was killed by the excessive cold. But when he thawed out, the body came back to life again.
Listen, Jerry, you really figure that this is going to be the new Buck Rogers thing of the future?
The thing about Buck Rogers is that you can't write science fiction anymore. As soon as you put it down, something happens to make it come true. It's impossible to project more than the next 5 years, or even less than that, because in 1967 we had no knowledge that by 1969 there would be men on the moon. And yet, when people who had been in captivity were released in 1971, they were totally amazed by the fact that people had reached the moon by 69.
We're listening to an interview with Jerome Tuccilli. And it's surely true that what seems bizarre today may be reality tomorrow. When we continue the interview, the author of Here Comes Immortality will talk further about means of preserving life and controlling the aging process. You're getting older on the Monitor Beacon. Monitor continues. Tony Taylor here, and music from Mama Cass Elliott. Don't let that good life pass you by. I think I'll hum that to my banker when I borrow some money. Anyway, don't let that good life pass you by. It is mankind's dream to live the good life forever. And we listened earlier to an explanation of how science is working on the technique of freezing the human body at the moment of death and keeping it in a state of suspension until a cure is found for whatever caused death in the first place. Our guest who wrote the book Here Comes Immortality is Jerome Tusilli. Now, he's talking with Cindy Adams.
The question I would like to ask you, I don't know whether you can answer, because since nobody has been frozen and really come back, how can you tell the answer? For instance, my question is, if you're frozen at the moment of death, or however long after you must be frozen, when you come back, do you have recall, total recall?
Nobody really knows this yet. There's no reason to believe that you would not have recall. They should be able to reverse any damage that happened to the brain before you were frozen. You're coming back as the same individual. Probably the biggest shock would be coming back into a strange world if it were, say, 40 years later or 50 years later. You'd need a whole new orientation program.
Well, this is like the POWs have only been gone 5 and 6 years. It's the same thing. In your book now, you start playing games with another little thing called cloning. Tell us, what is cloning?
Cloning is a system whereby they take a cell from anybody. They implant it in an ovum that has the nucleus taken out. And the child that is born is an exact physical copy of the party who donated the cell. So what you've got here is a lookalike. But it's really not a quest for immortality, because you can't reproduce the memory bank. This party does not have the memory that of the father in this case. This is a child with a single parent, but that's all it is.
But in cloning, is it only the physical characteristics that are reproduced, or is it the emotional traits or the the ways, the characteristics. In other words, if a man cracks his knuckles, is the clonee about to be a knuckle cracker too?
No, see, it's just the physical characteristics, because all the other things are psychologically conditioned, psychologically induced. The way I see cloning being used is for food production. If we can clone cattle, sheep, chickens, and so on, we have an endless source of meat products for the world. I think cloning is far more beneficial here than, say, manufacturing 50 look-alike Hitlers.
What do you feel about all this? You don't think there's something sick about it all?
Not sick. I think there's a built-in danger to it, like any new invention, like atomic power. Are we going to make bombs, or are we going to light up the world with it? With laser technology, are we going to use this for military purposes, or are we going to use it for medicine? With this, of course, if governments get hold of cloning techniques, as Hitler wanted to do in some crude form, they could use it to create some sort of a horrifying super race, you see? I would like... But I don't think this is a reason for not going ahead with it. We have to have progress and take our chances with it at the same time.
Listen, talk to me about the anti-aging pills.
According to the information I have, there is a pharmaceutical company that has already come up with something, which is in the experimental stage now, testing it for other effects, harmful effects, and so on. Once they get all the bugs worked out, it should be on the market within the foreseeable future. What this will do, of course, is slow down the aging process itself. It'll slow down the aging process. Eventually, it will halt the aging process, and they're looking forward to a day when they can reverse the aging process.
In other words, in theory, right now, if this ever becomes practical, this anti-aging pill, if you take it at the age of 50, you are then, if it works, halted at the level of 50 years old. Is that right?
This is the ideal, to do that. And then, of course, they want to go beyond that and take somebody who was 70 and make him 30 again.
Well, I can see a girl in 1999 going out with a guy and thinking he's attractive, and they exchange their phone numbers and addresses, and then she says, I'm 22, how old are you? He says, I'm 147, honey. You know, she's got to pass out with nerves. You expect that that's going to happen someday?
Well, we already have 70-year-old men with 20-year-old women.
Yeah, I have some in my own family.
But if the men are really physically rejuvenated, actually chronological age has no meaning anymore.
Well, I think... I have enjoyed meeting you. I'm not 100% sure. The book is very interesting. It's called Here Comes Immortality. The publisher is Stein and Day. The author is Jerome Tuccilli, who looks like he's 35, but who could be 246. And like I say, it was interesting meeting you.
Thank you.
This is Cindy Adams for Monitor.
One of the questions Mr. Tuccilli asks in his book is, shouldn't we give those who are dying today a chance to cash in on the scientific developments of the future? The answer, of course, depends on whether or not you can accept the means by which it can be done. I think he could have written this song. Someday we'll be together.
Someday we'll be together.
House of Supremes, and someday we'll be together. Ah, yes, you'll be 190, I'll be 32. But I always liked older women. That's it, it'll be all right. We'll work it out. We were talking about, well, the fascinating subject of how science is working on methods to slow down the aging process, when just recently in Ecuador, a scientific team which is trying to discover the secrets of longevity came across a man who was 142 years old, and another who was 135. So one key to long life seems to be a matter of geography, warmer climates, climates being, well, more favorable. I don't know much, well, I'm not crazy about living in Ecuador. How about you? I don't like bananas. And all they grow down there is rubber. What can you do? Well, here's a passport to the future for you. The music of Jean-Jacques Perret.
Care is the hand that feeds a child. Care reaches out across the sea to bring the gift of life where only hunger used to be. Care is the hope for those who need a home, a clinic, or a school.
Department 2, New York, 10016.
This is WNBC-FM 97.1 in New York.